Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Okay, Ironman 70.3 takes place in Dunleary this weekend. The race features a 1.2 mile swim from, that's 1.9 kilometres. I'm not going to read out the miles. 1.9 kilometre swim from Sandy Cove before taking athletes on a 90k bike course up the Wicklow Mountains National Park, and then a nice little jaunt of 21.1 kilometres in the run before finishing in Dunleary Harbour with Dublin Bay as the backdrop. Alistair Brownlee, you're welcome. You're doing this race this weekend.
Yeah, I am. Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to racing on Sunday in Dunleary for the 70.3.
So this is part of the Ironman circuit. You're building up to go into the World Championships in Kona, is that right, this year?
Yeah, so over the half Ironman 70.3 distance, the World Championships are actually in 2 weeks' time in Nice,
okay,
in France. So that's a really big race for me. And I was second at the World Champs last year, so obviously I want to go one better this year. And then the World Ironman Champs, which is twice that distance, is in Kona, Hawaii in October, the 12th of October. And it'll be the first time I've been there and attempted that. So I'm looking forward to that and building up to be hopefully in peak shape for that.
You were supposed to do a full Ironman in Youghal earlier on this year in Cork, but the weather intervened, is that right?
Yeah, it was going to be my first full Ironman. I'm still counting it as an Ironman.
I mean, okay, fair enough, I would too.
Yeah, I only missed the swim out, and I think I had plenty of time in the water, as it were, because it basically rained for the entire day, so I don't think I really needed to swim. But yeah, I still spent 8 hours, blood, sweat, tears and toil around the around the roads of County Cork, so it was a pretty tough day out.
I like the way you're ambitiously hoping that Dunleary is going to get you prepped in terms of warm weather training for both Nice and Hawaii. I mean, I'm down with that.
Yeah, I suppose it's maybe climate-wise, it's not the perfect copy, but in terms of the course, it's pretty close. You know, you come off the coast of Dunleary, it's fairly flat for the first 10-15k, and then you start doing some climbs up the hills into the Wicklow Mountains, which is beautiful. I've literally just ridden around that part of the course now, really scenic, really beautiful. Reminds me a lot of the Yorkshire Dales and the moors at home, so perfect, you know, feels like home roads. And I've heard there's a bit of an Irish heat wave happening this weekend, so hopefully
might at least 20 degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. I might have to put some sun cream on. So as long as the sun's out, it'll be better than my last experience.
I want to get into why people do Ironman, particularly when you've reached the elite level that you've reached at triathlon. Is it the same question about the, I don't know, was it Edmund Hillary or somebody who answered when he was asked, why are you climbing these big mountains? He was like, well, because it's there. Yeah. Like, why do you do this?
Yeah, well, that's a massive question, and it's not my answer, but the best answer I ever heard is if you can answer that, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. So, you know, it's just got to be so ingrained and so innate in you that it's what you do. You know, I've done triathlon since I was 8, and before that I was swimming and running and everything. So I've literally done it my whole life, and I think by the time I was 9, I knew about the Olympics and trying to go to the Olympics, and I knew the big triathlon in the world was Kona, the Ironman World Champs in Hawaii. So fast forward 22 years and now I'm trying to win that race. So yeah, I think it's been ingrained for me for a long time.
So is Kona a bit of a white whale for you? This is your Moby Dick, that like it's a very big thing that you've decided this is the year you're going to go for that?
Yeah, well, it's a massive thing. Thus far, really, my whole career and life has been based around the Olympics and doing well at the Olympic Games. And now, looking more towards Kona, I think a lot of people say beginners struggle to do it first time, and it takes a bit of experience and a bit of a learning curve. And yeah, I think very much I'm going to Kona to learn about the preparation, prepare for the heat, prepare for the distance, learn about that type of racing and the nutrition involved and everything. So I'm very much saying that, but yeah, I think when I get there and get in the race, I don't think I'm going to be, I'm going to be competitive, so, or try to be at least. So, but hopefully I've got a few more shots left in me after this year as well, when I can go back a bit more prepared and know what I've let myself in for and can be more competitive.
So Ironman seems like it's something you can do quite long, but you're kind of only entering into the peak years for Ironman. I mean, I don't know that, but is that right?
Yeah, generally a bit like in running, you know, people run the 5 and 10K on the track and then migrate to marathon as they get a bit older. I guess triathlon's a bit like that you do the short distance, Olympic distance, which is a race over a couple of hours, and then kind of migrate to do the longer stuff as you get a bit older.
And I'm sorry, and then you punish yourself by doing the Ironman as slower. A reward for your career.
Slower, you slow down and go for longer. So yeah, in theory, you're better at it as you get older. But who knows? I've hopefully got a few more years left in me yet.
So, the Olympics is obviously huge in your life. We're what a year exactly a year, and I think it was last week or last month was the year to the date. Do you know if you're going to Japan next year? Is that part of your plans?
I don't know for sure at the moment. I'd kind of planned pretty much not to after having a great result in London and then Rio, obviously, and to focus more on the long stuff. But at the moment, I guess the best way to look at it is I haven't closed that door completely. I'm completely focused on these next few races. And after I've raced in Hawaii in October, I'm going to decide for sure whether I'm going to try and be competitive in Tokyo and go to Tokyo or not, basically. So. I'm definitely not 100% going, and I'm not 100% not going either.
What are on the two scales that are making you decide? Is it obviously you want to defend your title, and yet at the same time you want to defend your title? So that's like a good thing, and it's also a bad thing if you don't feel like.
I think sometimes it depends almost how you wake up that day. You know, sometimes you wake up and you think, well, you know, if you go to the Olympic Games and you know you come second, then that's a disappointment, and it's not worth doing. Why would I go and, you know, come second or third or whatever, or fourth, even worse? But other days you think, actually, no, to even go to the Olympic Day Games is probably the best experience in sport. It's super special. And, you know, just to go and to be competitive as possibly can and train as hard as you can and be on that start line. My mantra for my whole career is, as long as you can stand on the start line, knowing that you've done everything you possibly can to be there as fit as you can, that's all you can really ask for. So, I'm not sure at the moment. And we'll see. We've had the kind of test event recently, and seeing what that's like in Tokyo, and seeing that it's a really, obviously, really hard, hot, relatively slow race because the climate plays a massive role in the race. So that makes it interesting as well. And there's a relay now in the Olympics for triathlon, so there's a potential to win 2 medals, which is quite a big deal. So we'll see. I'm trying to keep the door open.
You're talking yourself back into it, aren't you? That's what's happening.
Yeah. Well, it depends. It depends what day of the week it is. Yeah,
it's not a bad thing to be. Is there any part of you that goes, I actually could go and enjoy it in a way and experience the whole Olympics in a way? Because there's no pressure when you've won 2 gold medals. Surely there's no.
Well, there's probably more pressure because everyone thinks you just can turn up and win again. I think I've been fantastically lucky to go to 3 Olympic Games. You know, the Olympics is fantastic, and you do your race and then you can enjoy the Olympics without the pressure. But I think you don't want to go to the Olympics kind of just to enjoy it. You want to go to perform. And
just to enjoy it either. I just mean that you'd actually be able to.
With a little bit of, kind of foot off the gas, as it were, yeah.
Or psychologically a little bit less damaging to yourself if you don't win it. You know what, actually, I'm here, I'm gonna be myself as opposed to just the, I mean, look, I'm saying it now and I don't believe it myself.
Yeah.
You're not gonna change.
Yeah, maybe. Now, I think, it's still that same question, you know, could you be happy going knowing that you probably aren't gonna win? You know, I think that's basically the bottom of it. And I still don't know. I guess that's part of it. That's the problem.
When did you become that cold assassin that you've described there? Were you like that as an 8-year-old?
Maybe not. I've got a younger brother, obviously, and I think he'd probably say I was like that as an 8-year-old. I think similar to why do you do triathlon, I think I've always been very competitive. And from doing my first cross-country races around a muddy field in Leeds, I think I just always wanted to get better and try and win races, and I think I've always been a bit like that.
Your mum was a swimmer and your dad's a runner, is that right?
Yeah.
And so did you go swimming and do running with them just like for fun and suddenly go, actually, you know, I'm good at this and I'm not bad at this? How did that work out?
Well, my mum was a swimmer, and she took both of us down to the local swim club, and she had a bag of medals that she had won as a young girl, I guess, and I was like, I want to win medals. So I got told if you go to the swimming club and enter swim galas, you can win these medals, and that entranced me. I think even, you know, I was probably 6 at this point, My dad was a runner, and so we both of us got into running and did school cross country and
what
fell
type
running
of runner was
stuff.
He? What was it? Was he a cross
just
country?
A bit of cross country and just right. for fun and enjoyment. And they're both very kind of active and outdoors. So a lot of our holidays and weekends are spent going for walks and runs and mountain bike rides and stuff. And so yeah, we just became very active. And
were they kind of happy to see the competitive nature in you as kids and kind of encouraging to it? Because it's how to get your kids into sport. Obviously, people want your kids to enjoy sport forever. But if they're good at it, there's also a little bit where good at this, you could, you know.
Yeah, I think the opposite to being pushy. I very much remember my mum constantly being like, "Well, only do if you enjoy it, and if it stresses you out too much, don't do it." And so yeah, very much the opposite, and very kind of concentrate on your schoolwork, and don't get too into your sport in that way. So. I guess the opposite to your normal pushy parents, but at the same time, massively supportive. I think by the time I'm kind of 13, 14, a few mornings a week, every weeknight, I'm at least going to a swim session or a run session somewhere, and at the weekends going to a race. So, a hell of a commitment from your parents.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And do you look back on that now and kind of realise that and kind of think that none of this would have happened without that? But you obviously had the drive as well, but it's a team effort at that point to go, okay, we're going to go for this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a massive, massive commitment. I don't think ever, either my mum or my dad would have sat there and thought, right, we're doing this because both of them might turn out as professional athletes. They just thought it's what they want to do, so we're going to do it for them. And yeah, a massive team effort, and I'm very thankful for it. And it's part of, when you look at things, there's hundreds of things, people that have helped you out and decisions that have helped you out along the way that people obviously not so much, but just little decisions that almost kind of look that actually if you didn't join that swimming club at that point, nothing would have happened. It's amazing when you look back like that.
Do you have some of those you kind of go, ooh, that was a sliding doors moment for me?
Yeah, absolutely, loads of them. I guess a big one would be at 11, I went to a school that just happened to be the best running club in the north of England. And so there was a coach who'd been there for 40 years who took groups of lads out running every lunchtime. And basically that's why I went from being a good runner to winning English schoolboys titles, because I was running every single lunchtime, being kind of coached through it, got taught to enjoy and love running, and didn't get sent for that school for running, that's for sure, so a complete chance. There's lots of things that are really similar to that.
So you were obviously really good at swimming and running and cycling as a kid, because again, just to kind of reframe this for people who are listening, here we are in 2019, you've obviously won 2 gold medals, but triathlon was not a very popular, well-known sport when you were 8 or 9. It was still kind of it hadn't quite been dragged into the mainstream the way it's exploded in the last 10 years. Like, you were actually part of that explosion. The popularity of yourself and your brother in England has helped to kind of raise the profile of the sport. You're in the vanguard of it, as opposed to having people to kind of stand on the shoulders of. Again, your parents are like, yeah, you can do triathlon. It's a thing you can do. I mean, did it feel like it was unusual?
Yeah, it was definitely unusual. I think, as an 8-year-old, like I said, been swimming, been running, did a bit of cycle racing, did a bit of fell running, cross country, whatever. And triathlon was just another thing to try. I tried football, cricket, whatever, very unsuccessfully. Music. Our parents were great. I think one of the things I say a lot, and when parents of kids ask me, I think the important thing is, try absolutely everything, have that exposure, but hopefully there's one thing or a couple of things that really take the imagination and then support that, rather than it's really easy. And I think you see it a lot that kids and young people get maybe shoehorned into something and then the parents try to support that route and they don't have this kind of really innate enthusiasm for it. So I think having that exposure to everything, I think, is really crucial. And I was innately useless at anything involved hand-eye coordination. So did endurance sport. Kind of found triathlon, and I wasn't exclusively doing triathlon, I guess, as a kid. I just was completely entranced by the fact it was the three sports I enjoyed doing, and the kind of technical aspect of it, the fact that you're at the time jumping out of a swimming pool, jumping on your bike, it's laps, you're kind of a complicated course, the transitions, all those things that I thought were really kind of interesting and intriguing to race, rather than particularly just running around a football pitch or something. And I really enjoyed that. And I think that's why I chose triathlon. But yeah, at the time, I guess the anecdote I talk about a lot is that when I'm 10 and people say, you know, what are you doing this weekend? You're saying, oh, I'm going to do a triathlon. People are like, what's that? You know, literally, what's that? And I guess 5 or 6 years later, my mid-teens, people kind of starting to know what it was. And then in the build-up, I think we, Johnny and me, saw a massive change in the build-up to the London Olympics, which was the fourth time triathlon being the Olympics. But I guess in the UK, all of a sudden, triathlon's becoming one of the really big sports because it's free to watch. It's in the centre of London. You know, everyone can turn up and watch it. Massive. I think 500,000 people turned up to watch that race. You know, incredible experience. And fast forward a few more years, people kind of know what it is and almost watch it and follow it on TV. It's on live terrestrial TV in the UK. You know, a massive change to people all the time in the shops. Like, how's that Spanish fella? You know, are you going to beat him this weekend? Incredible. And I think now the biggest single change, as we talked about just before, is that people know what it is, know you can kind of follow it, and most importantly, know that you can have a go. And it's not, as 20 years ago, this sport that super weird anorak people did on a weekend, you know? I think that complete change of consciousness, that it's a bit like a 5K with the right amount of time and the right amount of training. Literally anyone can do a triathlon if they prepare for it, and it's a massive achievement to complete one. And isn't that a fantastic thing?
That's the thing, and like we were talking off air, like we have found that here when we got our two teams together, there was a little bit of competition, and everybody finished it, which was, you know, which I'd say a lot of people thought, well, there's no way those guys are going to finish that. And next year, hopefully, we're all going to do our own individually. So it's mad how the sport grows like that, and it gets its teeth into you, and you can see how it's still got loads more room to grow. Did you feel like you had to be an ambassador in the midst of like the pressure of preparing for the London Olympics as well? It's like, okay, so this guy, he's our spokesperson, get out there and tell everybody this is amazing. You're like, well, I just got to go over here and do all my training because otherwise I'll be, you know, not a great ambassador who finishes 15th or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think that in a nutshell is the trade-off and the skill of a professional sports person's life, you know, and you need to do what you need to do to train and compete to the best of your ability for sure. And then, you know, box that off, and outside that, what else can you do, you know, in terms of promotion, sponsor activity or whatever. So yeah, there's definitely part of that, and you've got to try and never let that second thing encroach on the first, and it's a balance that you're constantly kind of fighting in some ways. So, and it was obviously massive in the lead up to the 2012 Olympics, but I think I kind of never felt it was solely my responsibility. I kind of felt that the performances were by far the most important thing, and if I could get that right, that was the main thing. There was definitely loads of talk in Britain, especially that Britain needs some Olympic medalists in triathlon, and that'll change everything. So that was one of the small weight on my shoulders kind of going into those races.
Did you have to talk about that? Was there someone you had to kind of like, I just needed to like vent a little bit about, why is everybody, you know?
No, not really. I've never been a massive believer in, I'm a big believer in sports psychology. I think psychology is really important. I'm not sure about dealing with kind of officially with psychologists, as it were, because I've personally never see it make an actual impactful change. And that's for me personally. But yeah, I mean, we knew about the pressure with the thing I talk about a lot with, the morning before that race, I was sat on the sofa with Johnny in the hotel room, just on the edge of Hyde Park. And the main news story running was, isn't it amazing all these people have come on coaches from Yorkshire to watch Al and Johnny, you know, from the swimming club, from the running club, from, and we're thinking, flipping hell, we better not mess this up, you know. So yeah, the pressure's there, and really every single race, every single interview, every single everything in the lead up to that probably prepares you to be able to deal with that in some way. And it's that active, for me it was that active preparation actually in the discipline for years and years beforehand that I think allowed me to be able to deal with that at that time. And
it gives you the confidence, yeah, on the start line to say, I've done everything I possibly can to get here fit. Yeah. I suppose you're in an unusual situation too, in that you do have your kid brother with you everywhere, yeah, who might be your psychologist in a weird way.
Kind of wall to bounce off, I guess, yeah. Yeah, anyone who knows Johnny wouldn't call him a psychologist, but whether it's that or not, I think having someone there who's obviously very similar to you, going through similar things, I think was really important for both of us.
Can I show you this clip from 2016? I think you probably know what this is, but maybe you can talk us through a little bit of it. It's up on that screen there, coming here. So this is the World Championships?
Yeah, this is the World Championships in Mexico, in Cozumel. At the end of 2016, it's after the Olympics, so I've just won and Johnny's second in the perfect season. And if Johnny crosses the line first here, he's going to win the world title. I think this is the great end of the year. I just basically want to finish and have a few beers and get on with life. And I come round this corner and I know he's got heat exhaustion and he's in trouble. I've had heat exhaustion, so at this point I'm like, I'm just going to get him to the finish line, which...
The good lip readers there will be able to tell that, you know, he might have been...
Swore at him in some shape or form, yeah. So I'm like, yeah, you effing idiot or something. And get around this corner and I'm like, oh gosh, the finish line's further than I thought it was. So we're running towards the finish line at this point. I'm thinking, just get him to the finish line, just get him to the finish line. That's where the medical help is, and that's kind of my job done at that point. He's got heat exhaustion, and I've had heat exhaustion, so I kind of know what's going on. And then at some point running down here, I actually look behind to find out, to try and work out where the next person behind, because I know Johnny, if he still crosses the finish line at some point, then he's still got the points for the world title. So push him across the finish line, and then obviously he's not in a great place here, and he gets taken off to intensive care quickly.
It was intensive care, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you did push him over the finish line, and then kind of, it wasn't like, okay, are you okay? It was like, I can't believe you forced me to do that.
Yeah, well, no, I knew that if you crossed the finish line together, we would have got disqualified, and I also knew that... by then, I'd worked out that he needed the points for the World Series. So if he got across the finish line, he might still be in a shout. And actually, the guy who ended up beating him, Mario Mola, and it's probably a good thing that Johnny didn't win the world title in those circumstances, but if Mario Mola had finished one place, I think he was 7th or 8th, and if he'd been 8th or 9th, Johnny would have been world champion off that. And that would have been, I think, on reflection, it's probably a good thing that Johnny didn't win the world title after that.
It's an amazing scene. When you're looking back at it, you're kind of excited by watching it, and you can kind of tell. But it is an amazing bond that you two actually have. Like, it's not a competitive slit your throat, but it is also...
Well, it can be at times, yeah. Definitely, yeah. But I think, you know, first and foremost, we're brothers, and we train together and, you know, work hard together and push each other on. But then, yeah, I mean, if neither of us had been anything wrong with us, and I could possibly have been there to beat him, I would have been doing everything I could to beat him as well.
It's a mad relationship.
Yeah, I think it is. It is absolutely mad and strange, probably seems strange to a lot of people, but again, it's something that I guess we've grown up with and has developed in its way over a lot of years.
I think you guys were the first brothers on podium since 1906 in the Olympics, is that right?
Yeah, something like that. All kind of stats that I've forgotten. In an individual sport, I think people have done it in team sports.
Yeah. And do you feel like you wouldn't exist without each other at the level that you're at the minute? That, like, I don't know if you've read all those coaching books about these weird clusters of world-class table tennis players coming from three streets across, and you're kind of going, well, something, it's not in the water. It's obviously there's a coach, or they drove each other on, or there was some weird synchronicity in their training that actually inspired them to, and this mad competitive spirit.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to put your finger on it, because what, you know, is... Where we grew up, was it just the perfect environment, plus all these lucky sliding door episodes that we've talked about? Was it these external factors that allowed us to be who we were? And then say there was two of us, and actually there could have been 10 of us in the same area, and, you know, there could have been 10 competitive world-class triathletes. Or was it actually us and the fact that our kind of mindsets and then the competitiveness between us within that environment that made it special? Or is it kind of a combination of both of them? And it probably is the combination of, you know, right environment, right time, right people around us in terms of parents, coaches, friends and family, and then each other pushing each other on. And I think it's a happy storm of all of those. And if you maybe take any of those ingredients out of the pot, then you end up, yeah, with us not being quite as successful.
Yeah, you're just a little rung down if there's one of those pieces missing. I often wonder about... the ability to practice is the thing that I think separates most world-class athletes from everybody else. It's the bit where something isn't perfect and you keep going and going and going through the repetitions that normal people would just go, that's grand, that'll do. I've done my 1,000 repetitions, but you guys are doing 3,000 repetitions, and that's the difference. In endurance, it's often the ability to deal with boredom in the middle of long training sessions that a lot of people can't deal with. It must be at some point in the middle of a training session, you're, okay, I've done this cycle 1,000 times. What's your inner monologue at that point?
Yeah, well I think this is the talent question, really. People talk about talent and what makes people good athletes, nature, nurture. And I think that's the nail on the head, actually. Talent is, a lot of the time, being able to do the training, you know, that's a talent in itself, having the focus to be able to do, to be able to repeat a snooker shot 3,000 times or to be able to do lots of long bike rides and get on with it. I think that's something that a lot of people don't necessarily think of when you say the word talent, but it's some kind of ability. But there's other things that you can do to make it kind of psychologically easier. So, you know, when we talk about motivation a lot of the time, when you talk to people, people think motivation is sat on the sofa, you know, tonight at 8 p.m. on an evening, and you kind of know that you should go to the gym and you can't bother to motivate yourself to get off the sofa and go to the gym. And for me, I've always thought that's kind of willpower as such, and the skill in that is removing willpower from your life so you don't have to use it, because you've only got a certain bucket of willpower that you need to use when the weather's really bad or you're really tired or you have to get out to that session you don't want to do. And you know, you can't do that 3 times a day. You'd only last 5 days. So it's making your life easy so you can train. So having good people to train around you, having a great squad, so having the swimming pool that's relatively close to your house, making it part of your lifestyle, making it habitual. So, you know, like you might get up and go to work in the morning, my alarm goes at 7 o'clock and you're going swimming. It's not an option whether you're going swimming or not. You're going swimming, living in a great place, and lots of little things like making it easy that your bikes are all working order and on a wall in your garage, and all you have to do is get your clothes where you know they're going to be, grab your bike and get out the door. Not those tiny little psychological hurdles that might make you not go out of training some of those days and miss the session that might make the difference in the long run.
Are you motivated, or like in the build up to Rio, were you motivated by, like a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to think about the gold medal in, you know, from 2 years out? Or is it actually, I need to hit certain interval scores and I need to put a certain number of kilometers into my legs for the cycle. Are you micro-focused or are you kind of constantly going, I've got that big dream in my head the whole time?
I think it's a combination of lots of things and motivation. So if you break it down into, you know, into a day, you know, so you get up in the morning, your alarm goes and you're going swimming, and that's kind of this habitual motivation. It's what you do. You're not motivated by the Olympics. You then go downstairs, make a cup of tea and get in the car, and you might be motivated by something as simple as having a heated seat to sit on, you know, just break it down like a normal person. You're motivated to get to the poolside because you see your mates and you're having a laugh, and then, you know, you might motivate yourself to dive in the pool with the fact that you're going to have a bacon sarnie for breakfast afterwards, and then 20 minutes later, you've done a warm-up and you're in the middle of a really hard set, and you're motivated by the fact that my brother's next to me or someone else, and you're racing him in the pool. And so, you know, within half an hour, 40 minutes, you've motivated by a handful of different factors. I think every so often, for me, you're going out and you're pushing especially hard, or it's that session you don't want to do, and you're thinking, yeah, you know, the Olympics is in 6 months' time. Get out and do it. You need to do it. So, and I think you probably do take that little bit more intensity into an Olympic year than you would in other years. And maybe all that is that extra 2% of motivation that makes you do that 2% extra that you wouldn't otherwise do, which can be dangerous in itself. But yeah, for my training, you're training 20 times a week, say, pretty much 3 times every day. I couldn't motivate myself to get out the door 3 times every day, 6 months of which are winter, you know, and it's like 3 degrees because the Olympics is in 2 years' time. No way.
In the middle of a race, what are you saying to yourself?
In the middle of the race, just trying to be really focused and break it down. Just get up this hill, get around this corner, and there's a dangerous corner coming up. Just, you know, get to this next barrier or whatever, break it down into small chunks.
And so there's no great kind of... I've got to do this. There's no fallback. It's just small process.
When your mind wanders and you're starting to feel a bit sorry for yourself and you're thinking my legs hurt and it's not good. At that point, you've lost like the simple focus and your mind's wandering. That's probably when you're having a bad race.
Does that happen? You've been there.
Yeah, for sure. When you're not like really caught up, I guess, in the moment and really focused on what you're doing. You know, when you're can see someone in the crowd, or when you're thinking about what you might have for dinner that night, or I think that that's when you're having a bad race for me, because you've just kind of given up with the racing and you're thinking about other things.
You tend to win, obviously, you know, you win races when you cross the line, but you tend to win kind of a lot of close races as well. So it's not like you're killing everybody in the swim and then killing everybody in the cycle and jogging home. There's a competitive racing element to that last bit as well. Was the running always the thing that you were strongest at, like even going back to being a kid?
Yeah, pretty much. I've kind of always really enjoyed and loved running. I've had some great coaches and teachers and friends at school particularly that kind of had a massive impact on my running career. And I kind of live in an area where there's lots of people running, and it's got a great kind of culture of running and endurance sport. And yeah, in Olympic distance triathlon, running is the really crucial part of it.
And in that last kilometre, when you are actually flat out racing against two other people who are also screaming in pain but desperately trying not to show it, at that point, what are you telling yourself?
I'm only thinking, if the race is going well and you're really, completely involved in the race, you're basically thinking of nothing. All you're trying to work out is, how can I beat this guy next to me? And you're completely involved in the tactics, you know, when should I go, how should I go? If it's really, really hard, I've always had this thing that you just, you know, if someone's running hard in front of you, all I'm doing is focusing on a tiny point on the back, on their back, and telling myself that nothing else in the world matters at that point, apart from making sure that dot doesn't get any further away, and just complete feeling like you pour your entire energy into just moving forward. Really,
is that painful? Are you suffering?
Well, it is massively painful, but you're trying to take away all the pain and just make it super simple and break it down into small chunks.
Was winning the Olympics everything you wanted it to be, or is there also an automatic feeling of crash sometimes that, because we've talked to various athletes who are like, oh yeah, I felt the sense of relief after it. I didn't actually feel that euphoria and that joy. Did you get euphoria? Did you get relief? Did you get just okay, I've done that thing that I've always wanted to do. What's next?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people talk about this, and I've been lucky enough to win it twice, and I was lucky enough to know that when I ran down the finish line in Rio, I was really lucky to do it twice, and I didn't get the chance to kind of soak it in as much in London as I'd like. So I had the time and the kind of place of mind to soak it in and really make the most of it, which was super special. Because London was, there was definitely a lot of pressure going into it, a lot of expectation, you know. Basically everyone just thought I was just going to start and win the race, and I was thinking, yeah, but there's all these things that go wrong, you might not win. And so I crossed that finish line, and one of the 100 emotions that was going through my mind at that point was relief and just thank gosh that's all over. There is definitely that, and then definitely the part of you that especially for London, you know, I really clearly remember in 2005 when London won the bid to win the Olympic Games, and I didn't think I had any chance of going to the Olympics at that point, but thinking, wow, you know, Olympics, home Olympics, isn't that amazing? So, almost every day for those 7 years, I'd probably thought to some extent of that Olympic Games and that Olympic day, and prepared for it and done everything I could to get there. And then when it's over, it's like, wow, you know, that's gone. So there was that to an extent, but it didn't last too long.
Yeah, that's a bit mad. Everything poured into this moment. Mm. The moment happens. Okay. Mm. And the world doesn't end, because you kind of feel like that's an end for everything, right?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of my preparation strategy is, you know, don't even let yourself think what it'll be like when you cross that finish line. You know, everything is, what can I do to make sure you get on the start line in the best possible position to win that race? You know, everything down to your thought processes, the training you're doing. And then you're not even allowing yourself to think what it's like to cross that finish line. So when you do, it's like, you know, you don't even know really what you should be feeling. I took it in my stride and got on with it, and enjoyed a few weeks afterwards.
Well, that's good. And like, have you begun to allow yourself to even think about what life is like when all of this finishes, when the athlete stops being the athlete and the competitor, and you emerge back into civilian life as a human being like the rest of us?
I think that's a really tough question for any athlete to answer, because I think you've got to be so absorbed in what you're doing pretty much that it's you don't allow yourself to think too long term. And yeah, but I guess yeah, at some point it'll be like that. And I think whatever I do, I'll be riding my bike and running most days anyway. And I think I'll still be competitive in some shape or form, whether that's the local Fell race or something, I don't know, but I'd be involved
Iron Man
in sport.
Masters series for over 50s, over 60s, over 70s, you'll be the annual champion in Kona.
Maybe, we'll see.
Well, listen, have a great time in Dunleary, have a great time in Nice, and best of luck in Kona. Like, I know you don't enter anything without the expectation that you're going to win it, but the first time in Kona, surely you're allowing yourself to think.
Yeah, I'm telling myself very much I'm there for the experience and the learning experience and to see what it's like for future years, yeah.
How long is the, if everything goes well, what kind of time should it take?
About 8 hours.
I mean, it's madness.
Yeah, it's madness. Yeah, when you say it like that, you're like, well, yeah.
It's madness. Yeah. Well, listen, best of luck with it. The Ironman 70.3 takes place in Dunleary this weekend. The race is 1.9 kilometre swim in Sandy Cove. And then the cycle is all the way up the Wicklow Mountains and then a 21K run before finishing with Dunleary Harbour and Dublin Bay as the backdrop. And hopefully everybody gets out and cheers. Alistair, great guest. Thanks so much for joining us
today. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.